one of the mysteries of Hilchos Yom Tov is why kibbuy, extinguishing a fire, has such restrictions placed upon it. If we make just a simple mathematical calculation, it ought to lead us to the conclusion that extinguishing a fire for whatever reason on Yom Tov should be mutter. And the calculation is very simple. The Gemara says, just as I can kindle a fire so that I can cook, suppose I need to extinguish a fire to cook. And you might say that's an oxymoron. How is it that I extinguish a fire to cook? And the answer is very simple. The definition of kibbuy, of extinguishing, is not only if I extinguish a fire completely, but even if I extinguish a fire partly, and the rest continues to burn, that's also a violation of kibbuy. It's spelled out in the Gemara Halacha and Hilchos Shabbos, it's spelled out in the Ibi and Daf Chof Gimel and Masechta Beyo. So the Gemara states that if I take a piece of meat and I roast it directly on the coals, it's mutter to do so, despite the fact that in the roasting process, since I put the meat directly on the coals, I smothered the coals to some extent and I caused them to partially be extinguished. Nevertheless, it's mutter. So kibbuy is mutter on Yom Tov for the sake of Hilchos Nefesh, and Havara is mutter for Hilchos Nefesh. Then why is it that when it comes to Havara or it comes to Hoytzah, it's not only mutter for Hilchos Nefesh? If I have some other Yom Tov meat other than Hilchos Nefesh, it's also mutter. As we discussed previously, I can carry for the sake of learning, for a mitzvah, for enjoyment. So why is it when it comes then to kibbuy, if it's mutter for Hilchos Nefesh, I should also invoke the principle of mitzvah? And that basically should say, well, if I want to go to sleep in this room when the light, the candle is on, I should be able to blow it out on Yom Tov. Or any other reason that I would need a dark place, and it's inappropriate or uncomfortable to have it light, I should be able to extinguish it. And the halacha very clearly states that extinguishing the fire under those circumstances, if it's not directly for Hilchos Nefesh, is prohibited. Havara, it's not true. Havara, I can make out, for example, Havara for steam. Let's say I want to light a fire for the purposes of steam. Is a machlokus Rashi in the Ran, but one of the shitas we're showing them is mutter because of mitzvah. What? Light is moilat eish, that's something else. I can't start it from the beginning. But once I have a fire, in Hilchos Shabbos, if I have an existing fire, I can't dump more wood in on Shabbos. I'm on a full-fledged machal Shabbos because of Avor, and don't give it mutter. I just cannot start a flame from scratch. Whatever the reasons, there are three, four different shittas, I believe four different shittas, why? But that's not the subject of today's share. And according to most shittas, other than one interpretation of the Magid Mishnah, or the Taz's interpretation of the Magid Mishnah, according to most interpretations, it is only an Issa D'Rabbanan, not an Issa D'Raisa, so even to start up a fire from scratch. But there is one shittah decided by the Taz, which is otherwise, but that is not the prevailing view. So, Havara is mutter. And it's mut to have a din of mitoch. Hatzor of mut and have a din of mitoch. According to most Rishonim, mitoch is not limited merely to hatzor and havar. It applies to all malachas. There are some sheikhs Rishonim that limit mitoch to havar and hatzor. But the broadly accepted view is that mitoch applies to other malachas too. And the Gemara applies to sheikhet, for example. Or cites a reference which would apply mitoch to sheichet, to shechita, in the sugya, in the Daf Beis, in the Masechta Beis. So how is it that kibbuy is any different? It's one of the abiding mysteries of Hilchos Yom Tov. The Pnei Yoshua offers insight into this problem. And he tells us the following, is that we have to divide all the malachas, this is broadly, into two groups for our purposes. Malachas which are inherently Hilchos Nefesh malachas, and malachas which may at times touch Ochel Nevesh, but their principal functions are not Ochel Nevesh. You might leave Hetzai out, Hetzai may have a different cheshbon altogether. But he says, those melochas, Shechita, Avora, which are, by definition, you can't have Ochel Nevesh without them, these are the backbone of having Ochel Nevesh, Bayer, etc., all of the melochas, which may apply to whatever extent they're mutter, but the melochas which are Ochel Nevesh melochas, you could have a possibility, you could have mitot applied to those melochas. Those melochas which happen to touch Ochel Nevesh, when they touch Ochel Nevesh, they're mutter. But there's no halacha of mitot that applies to them. Mitot is limited only to those melochas which Chazal defined as Ochel Nevesh melochas. This kibbutz is only incidentally involved in the preparation of Ochel Nevesh. Most situations and circumstances of kibbutz do not touch Ochel Nevesh. When it touches Ochel Nevesh is a heter, and we're allowed to do kibbutz, as we'll see, directly for Ochel Nevesh. But to then build upon it with the principle of mitoch and expand upon it, that is only limited to those melochas which are Ochel Nefesh melochas. This is the thesis of the Peyoshua, which is probably the clearest and most cogent of the explanations that has been felt. Now, in light of that, we wind up with some serious anomalies. I can take a steak, which I could cook. I could roast it not directly on the coals. I could roast it above the coals too, and it'll be properly cooked, and I'll be able to eat on Yom Tov. But I can't place it directly on the coals and roast it directly on the coals on Yom Tov, despite the fact that it involves kibbutz. If chas v'shalom a person's house catches fire, as we'll see, me'ikra me'dina de gemara, the halacha l'maaseh is otherwise, but me'dina de gemara, one may not extinguish that fire. He just has to stand back and just watch the place burn to the ground. So the insight of the Pnei Yeshua gives us some insight into why this could be. Cooking is Ochel Nefesh, and Ochel Nefesh is a heter to our Torah, the Hebrew. Though other needs, which I may have on Yom Tov, are mutigos of mitoch. A person needs a house, and he needs a place to live, that certainly Tzorach Yom Tov, to have a roof over his head. There are those Rishonim that allow Mitoch even to apply to situations, we'll come back to this, the situations of Hefsid Mamon is also considered somewhat of a need for Yom Tov. It's debatable, one should avoid it l'chatchila, but in the place of dire need, one certainly can rely upon that view cited in the Ramo, that when it touches Hefsid Mamon, you also apply mitoch. So a person's house is going up, there's certainly a mitoch to save his house, certainly a mitoch to have a roof over his head, and yet the halacha says that it's prohibited. The reason is because that's not an Ochel Nefesh manifestation. We don't apply mitoch. Now, as I say, this is only midinah de gemara. You find already all the way from the time of the Rishonim that they insisted that a person extinguish a fire on Shabbos, unless it's under very, very rare circumstances, which I'll define. Normally a fire, when one lives in an urban area, involves either Pikuach Nefesh directly or Sofer Pikuach Nefesh. Because if the fire isn't put out, it can spread to other homes. And who says everyone's not going to necessarily escape and run out? Maybe there's the 93-year-old lady down the block that's sleeping, or someone's grandmother that came to Yom Tov, who says she's going to be able to run out in timely fashion. So first of all, there's the direct shash of Pikuach Nefesh in urban areas where the houses are close together. That's number one. Number two, throughout history, and we live together in these settings with non-Jews too. And in the non-Jewish world, there were two potatoes besides the issue of Pikuach Nefesh, that we don't know whose house is out and who else's house is going to burn down. But there were two other considerations that the Rishonim had. What was clearly agreed to by everyone, without any debate, was if the fire started in the house of a Jew, he was allowed to extinguish the fire on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Because in Eastern European society, they had a very unpleasant practice
our non-Jewish neighbors. And that is, if a fire started in somebody's house, and oftentimes the result of it would burn down half the town, so they would search around until they found out where the fire started, and they took that household and they threw them into the fire. This was a common practice in Eastern Europe. So consequently, the Rishonim, it was clear cut to them that it was mutter if the fire started in one's house, don't allow them to extinguish it. But beyond that, there was some debate if the fire started elsewhere, but the halacha was fixed, in fact, even in other situations, that it was mutter. Because, as we know, even at Ayyam Azeh, in the aftermath of every great disaster, what's the first thing that happens? Looting. That was the first thing they have to do after there's a hurricane. After there's a hurricane, they have to send the national guard, and they impose martial order, right? Martial law, which means that if anyone, they see anyone, there's a chash that he's looting, they're allowed to shoot him to death, no question asked, basically. And that's how the government, Dar HaYom HaZeh, maintains order in a situation of a natural disaster. That has, the world hasn't changed. If we didn't, if the president wouldn't call out, the governor wouldn't call out the national guard, the looting would take place, and unfortunately we've seen it across the United States when the leadership was not firm enough to confront it head on. It's what happened, the looting started, and once the looting starts, people's lives also get caught up in it, and unfortunately in our city not so long ago we saw that as well, with John Roosevelt. Once the mob gets loose, so who knows where it ends. So the Rishonim were very forceful on this point as well. That we should be Mechallel Shabbos to prevent such a situation, because if we allow a major disaster to take place, what's going to come in its aftermath will certainly endanger lives. And the truth is, with a realistic view, it hasn't changed, that Ayyam Azeh. And the governor of every single state in this country knows it hasn't changed. And that's why as soon as the first thing he does is he sends out the National Guard after such a disaster. So those are the considerations. So it's a rare circumstance. In other words, if a person owns a cabin in the middle of no place with nothing around and no trees around and there's no one in the house, he's the only one there and he knows no one else is in the house, and the thing goes up, so then he's supposed to stand back and just let it go. But that's a very rare circumstance that that's going to happen in such a situation where there are no trees and no other possibility of it starting a fire which could harm someone else. Oh, so we'll see. So which Tzerech Yontif? So this starts a whole, we'll come to this. Now, if, because the thrust is for Ochel Nefesh and not for other needs, so if a person needs a place for Sudas Yontif, and his house Chas V'Shalom will burn down and he won't have a place to conduct Sudas Yontif, So then the halacha is that he's allowed to save the house. But if he'll have another place for Sudas Yontif, then even if he won't necessarily have a roof over his head, but that's not Ochel Nefesh. Very limited to Ochel Nefesh. If his pool will burn up, but that he's allowed to put out the fire. If he loses dishes on his table and no one else will lend him something else to eat with over Yontif, that's also Ochel Nefesh. But that Teirim are very limited. Now, from all of this, we come to a consideration of Mitoch, rather not Mitoch, rather Kibui, is being highly focused in its heter solely on Ochel Nefesh, on eating directly. Now, from that there are a number of halachos which come to this. Suppose, for example, that I'm cooking something on Yontif, and now it reaches a point in the cooking that I have to set it to a lower flame. Or I used the flame earlier today to boil water, so I put the flame all the way up. There's water, the one thing that's not going to burn is a kettle full of water. So I don't have any concern. Now I want to cook something else. Now I can't cook regular food on such a high roaring flame. It'll singe the bottom of the food almost immediately. So Dira Halacha states that I'm allowed to put the flame down to appropriate level for the cooking. assuming that I have no other fire which is ready at an appropriate level. In other words, if I have two fires on, one with a huge flame that I just boiled the kettle on, and a second one which is a normal size flame which would be appropriate as it is for the cooking, so then the halacha states that I should place a daft on the one which is appropriate in its size, and I may not lower the flame in question. Now, in the Ramah, Ramah stated something very remarkable. The Ramah stated that the question is, should one do if I have a choice? I don't have any flame which is appropriate in size. I have a flame which is too large, and I have a flame, and I could light another flame which would be of appropriate size. So there, so the Ramah states, and a rather remarkable statement, that I should light a new fire and not extinguish the old one. So Ramah Zatzal, in a very incisive tshuva, questions the logic of the Ramah's reasoning. He said, Havara, lighting a fire, is an Issa D'Raisa. Extinguishing, except if I do it for the production of charcoal, is only an Issa D'Rabbanan. So how could it be that the Ramah is going to tell me that there's going to be a larger head to Ochel Nefesh for something which is inherently Osim and Atayra, rather than for something which is Osim and Rabbanan? How could that be? We said that Kibui is Mutter for Ochel Nefesh, and Avar is Mutter for Ochel Nefesh. And Kibui only involves a violation of an Issa D'Rabbanan, and the Havara involves a D'Raisa. So why shouldn't the world, should there be a preference in Ochel Nefesh to take Havara, kindling the fire, rather than extinguishing the fire? Well, let's say I can take from this flame, right? I'll take a splinter of wood or a match, I'll put it into this fire and light it and kindle the next bunch of wood. Well, surely on Shabbos, what would happen if you did this? So Havara it is. Let's not lose sight. A Malacha it is. It's just the Torah allowed us to do this Malacha. It's a Maisa Malacha. Maisa Malacha it is. It's an act of Malacha. It's a Malacha which the Torah allowed me to do on Yom Tov, but it's Malacha. The Ramah? Ramosha. So he says, why should there be a preference to tell me that Dafka should take Havara over Kibui? The Kibui is Mutter also for Ochel Nefesh, and Havara is a lesser one. So good. So why in the world should the Ramah tell me I should choose that? He want to tell me take either one. Tell you. But why in the world should you tell me I should Dafka choose Havara? What's the logic of that? They're both Mutter. And if anything, the starting point is Kibui should be more Mutter than Havara. So why choose Havara rather than Kibui? What's the Seichel? What? Keep it only Osama the Rabbanan under most circumstances. So if anything, if I had to choose normally between one or the other, right, I would choose that one. You say, well, both are Mutafokh. You want to make them both equal to you. But how did the Ramah arrive at the conclusion that I should like kindle a new fire rather than extinguish the old fire? So Ramah Shabbat the following. Very interesting, very fascinating. He says, the truth is, you should undoubtedly, if you didn't have another fire waiting for you at an appropriate size, you should extinguish the fire. Don't go. You don't have to go light a new fire. You can extinguish the fire that you have. The Seichel HaPoshet is that one. He says, well, what was the Ramah's consideration? We have to realize the Ramah, both his stature of whom he was, and the fact that Kol Beis Yisrael was the Kabbalist Psukim, it always rings before me, it always rings in my ears, is a tshuva of the Rode Behuda that I said many, many, many years ago. And the response that had to do with a shayla in Hilchos Gittin, in the Shulchan Aruch of Eben HaEzer. And it had to do with the writing of the name of a certain town and what simonim, etc., what was appropriate and not. And the Ramah had a certain psak. And then Rode Behuda started in with him for two or three different reasons. He did not feel the psak was appropriate. But, and then Rode Behuda was a very, very, very strong player in psak. Very powerful placing. In the end, what does he write to Rode Behuda? But nevertheless, he says, we cannot forsake Torah's Moshe so readily. and he is mitzavah, he says, it ends off the tshuva of how to fulfill the Ramah's psak. Despite all his objections to the Ramah, you know, the Yehuda was not so quick, despite all his objections, to walk away from the Ramah's psak, and he insisted that it be fulfilled. So, we don't, the Ramah is not taken, it cannot be taken lightly. So Ramosh has a very fascinating suggestion. And he says the following. He says, the Ramah was talking, remember, there's a difference in technology between what I'm talking about and what the Ramah's talking about. I'm talking about a gas range, he said. The Ramah was talking about a situation with solid fuels. He used Buddha coal. He says, what's the difference? He says, the difference is very simple. He says, to light a fire, what does it take? You take one match and you light it, and that's all. So you did one act and everything else happens by itself. To extinguish a fire is not so easy. You dump water here, you put out this part, you put out the next part, the third part. It's a whole enterprise to put out a solid fuel fire. He says the Ramah's consideration was that to extinguish a fire could involve 5 or 10 maisim of acts of malocha to get it out. Whereas to kindle a fire, I can just take one piece of kindling wood and put it in there and the whole thing will light up on its own. So the Ramah's assessment was that to the largest extent, Havara would involve less malocha than kibbutz. And therefore, that was his consideration, that I should choose after kindling Havara rather than kibbutz. But Ramosha says, how does that compare to our technology? He says, in our technology, it's both the same. I turn the dial one way, the fire goes higher. I turn the dial the other way, it's all the same ma'aseh malacha. There's no difference. The exact same amount of malacha is needed to light the fire and to extinguish the fire. What's the difference? So he says, it's one ma'aseh malacha, however you slice it. Consequently, he says, in our situation, it's impossible to state that there's a preference for havar. So one might as well do the kibbutz and not bother with the havar. Oh, that's another problem. We didn't come. Now, we talked about the fact that Meilir Eish, kindling a fire anew, is also on Yontif. Now, however you slice it, when you flip the switch, you're creating a circuit which causes electric to flow. Electric does not flow in that circuit whatsoever until it's a closed circuit. There's no electricity. There's no electricity. All the EEs, the electrical engineers, have shown me, if you have a socket without a bulb and you put a meter onto there, there was no electricity whatsoever in there at this point in time. The fact that you get a shock, if you put your finger into it, is because we closed the circuit, and that causes the electrons to flow. But there is actually no electricity in there before the circuit is closed. They tell me that absolutely, it's a fact, they'll put the meter on and they will demonstrate it to me. So, there's no way, really, to construe that the fire, or the ash, which exists somewhere else, kindles this ash. That's not exact in electricity. There's no kindling. It's not. When I'm dealing with kindling, I have an existing fire, and that flame is the cause of the next flame being lit. That's not what takes place here. I basically arrange the circuit in such a fashion that the electrons flow through it. But it's not that what was here previously is the cause of kindling what's here. There's really no difference ultimately whether I raise the temperature on an electric circuit, or I started from scratch. In both situations, basically the same thing is happening. No, I'm coming. Yeah, there's Meilir Eish when one's dealing with an electric circuit. That's Nimnu V'Gomu, that's agreed upon. Now, hang on. Now, consequently, in those gas ranges which have electronic ignition, and you hear the click, click, click. This is basically the click, click, click. There's a spark on the shooting. You have gas, and you're shooting a spark at it. And the spark is intended to ignite the gas. So that one is closing an electronic circuit. And that's Meilir Eish. That's also an outdoor. Now, let me just go back one step. I assumed a certain position, which I believe, but again, that is a matter of controversy concerning it. Nimnu v'gomru, everyone agrees that to start an electric circuit from scratch, to open a closed to, or I should really say, to close an open circuit, which is really technically correct, and cause the appliance to work, that's moibidesh. That's nimnu v'gomru, that's agreed upon. But the issue is, suppose I have a circuit which is already in action, and I want to change the resistance, the ohms on that, which would cause more electricity to flow through. I personally are among those that believe that that is also Magarish. And for the reason that I told you, because it's not the existing fire which kindles the next one. It's by lessening the resistance that causes a larger flow of electrons. It's not akin to the first fire kindling the second. That's not technically what takes place. I believe Ramesh Zatzal also viewed it this way. But I do admit that it is controversial because of Shlomo Zalman, and it's true, this goes up and back in the Mincha Shlomo. When one place is Machmer and one place is Meikel, he's of 2 minds on the subject. But as I say, I can only tell you the conclusions that I've reached. Well, it depends. There are two different possibilities. If the heat raises, that means there are more electrons flowing through the system. No, there are more going through. It has to. But basically what happens, typically there are two types of situations that you can have. Electrically, it can work in two ways. It can work on a typical electronic range when you go from one setting to the other as a totally different circuit. One closes, you machaber that, and you madlik a different one. It's a totally different circuit, which in fact has less resistance in it, and therefore more electrons flow through. But what you've done, the way that you accomplish it, is by closing one circuit and lighting another circuit. So there are two violations involved. You did kibbuy on one, and you did hadlok on the sahavor on the second. If you can have a situation which is similar to a dimmer switch, and you could have such a dial, in fact, which works the same way. I don't know how often they make them nowadays. I mean, you could have a dial which, in fact, has different circuits, and it's just going from one circuit to the next. But you can have a dial which works like a dimmer switch. And kind of what you're doing is you are changing the resistance, the number of the ohms. You are lessening the ohms, and therefore more electrons can flow through. And the higher the resistance, the less the electrons that flow through. That's electrically what takes place. So I do not see how, it's not that the existing electric now kindles something new. It just allows more electric to go through. It's merely incidental that there was electric here, and now I'm letting more electric through. I could have gone from 0 to 10 or from 10 to 20. I don't see much difference between it. Yes, I am. The flow of gas? No, it's not molar. It's not a problem because remember, I am not starting with molar ash. As long as I have an existing fire, and what I'm doing is I'm lighting this from a pre-existing flame, then there's no isra on yontif.
Well, what if there's an electrical charge that starts it, but after
was good. So that's the problem. How can I? If I started it presently with an electronic spark, that's what's prohibited. If it was going before and I want to raise it, that's not a problem. I'm allowed to dump more fuel into a fire.
So that's not going to affect the amount of electrons?
No, in an electronic ignition, the circuit only works for the moment when you at that spot. It's either usually to put it at the very beginning or the very end for that reason. And there are two types of, they don't put it in the middle. Because basically, you want to close the circuit. Either you put it at the very beginning and it lights, or you go all the way to the end and it lights, and then you go back. Now the practical difference is that if you have it at the beginning, that you can't open a new flame on Yom Tov even to light with a candle, because you're going to hit the electric circuit right away. If you have it at the end, then you can go all the way, then you can actually open the gas and light it from an existing flame, that you can do. But once that's finished, you move away from that spot, that circuit's closed now. It doesn't keep shooting sparks, you don't leave it there. You set it for a setting that's appropriate for cooking. And that's it, that circuit is finished. Now you're just burning gas now. Yeah. That's a different, I don't want to get involved in why. It's Gmoyler Eish, let's put it that way. Why it's Havora, I'm not postulating what the Malach is. But it's generally assumed that it's a violation. Whatever the violation of Gmoyler Eish is, applies to starting an electric circuit in the first place. Why electricity, under certain, electricity has two different types of manifestations from the halachic standpoint. It has manifestations like one has an incandescent bulb, where there's a filament that turns red. You have a hot plate, which is also a similar principle. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Shabbos that if one takes a piece of metal and causes it to glow red hot, that is a violation of Havor. And the Rambam takes quite literally, I believe there are two places in Shas, approximately, where the Gemara uses the language Gachele Shomateches, a coal made of metal. And the Rambam takes it quite seriously, that when it uses the terminology Gachele Shomateches, a coal made of metal, it literally means that it is a fire, just as Gacheles is a fire. It means causing a piece of metal to glow red is a violation of Havor. And this was the simplest reason, in fact, why the incandescent bulb may not be kindled or turned on Shabbos. And this is Rav Chaim Oizer's point, because one violates Havor. And Rav Chaim Oizer had a very interesting practice because of that. And Motzei Shabbos, he used to make the Beremer Eish an electric light in his house, not on a fire, because he wanted it to be eminently clear to everyone in Europe that he held that this was so sure that this was a fire that he was willing to make the Beremer Eish on the electric bulb. Now, what happens, now we use, most of the uses of electricity do not have a glowing red filament to them. But an electric fan, for example, doesn't have such a situation. So what exactly is the Iser in that case? That is a very good question, and there are approximately a half a dozen different shittas what the Iser may be. Chaim Oizer considered it some form of Eish Midrabbanan. Others considered it that it's a form of Meila. There are no shortage of use of why it's awesome. But there's a clear-cut reason why it may be so that we don't know. But generally agreed to by almost all poskim that those forms of electricity which do not involve making a piece of metal glow red, a filament glow red, or an element glow red, is only an Issur Midrabbanan and an Issur D'oraisa. That's generally agreed to by almost all poskim. The Chazon Ish, I believe, would disagree. But the poskim that disagreed with him on that are basically Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Moshe Feinstein, Yaakov Kamenetsky, and Leibon Henkin, Chaim Oizer. I mean, no shortage of the major, major poskim of the 20th century that did not agree with the Chazon Ish on that point. Now, I want to touch. Now, if one merely wants to turn down the fire because it's too hot, or if one is rather cost conscious and one doesn't want to burn up gas unnecessarily, neither of those two reasons are acceptable reasons to turn the fire lower on Yom Kippur. Yeah. There is a whole consideration which started really in the gas lamp era, when the streets of Europe were illuminated with gas lamps. So the question arose, what exactly is the nature of the kibbutz, which is associated with the gas lamp? When what I'm doing all is, I'm not extinguishing anything which is burning, I'm not pouring water on something burning, I'm merely depriving, closing the valve so no more gas enters the system. Is this a violation of Havoras of kibbutz or not? And it would seem, according to some, that this is a machlokus really of the Rishonim of Tosfos and the Rosh, if there's some violation involved in it or not. The Yeshua's Yaakov in a Sefer, in his Sefer on Or HaChaim, at the end of Siman Shin Lama Dalet, which deals with matters of kibbutz on Shabbos, fires. So he wrote a lengthy piece where he concluded that this form of kibbutz should be mutter, should not be a violation of kibbutz. But at the end he signed off, he says, L'halocha below the Maisa. He says, theoretically, I believe that I'm right, but he was not ready to take the responsibility to give this psak. And consequently, what we can state is that the general practice in Klal Yisrael is to consider this kibbutz. and we do not, you know, close the gifts. The more individual poskim who allow their adherents to close the gifts on Yom Tov, that is true. But it was never incorporated, even by them, as a general psak for Klal Yisrael. It was never put, they never fully put it itself. But they held for varied reasons that they had. So there are individual people who learn from their rabbeim that such a thing is mutter. But the generally accepted practice is, in fact, not to close the gifts for any reason on Yom Tov, unless for some reason it became necessary for cooking. But that would be the lower of them. To actually close the gifts, there would never be a need, because all one has to do is take the pot off the fire. So you would never have to close the gifts for the sake of cooking. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. The question is, in those times and places where they had gas pilot lights, does this affect the question of kibbutz and yom tov? And the answer is resoundingly no. It has no effect whatsoever, for a very simple reason. Number one, as I mentioned before, that even kibbutz b'mitzvah, a partial extinguishing, is a violation of kibbutz. Number two, if one understands the basic setup of how a pilot light works, the pilot is a totally separate flame from the flame which is burning on the range. But they do, the design of a pilot light is rather ingenious, is at the edge of the gas jet, they have a few holes on the side usually, which allow gas to seep out from the side of the gas jet. And next to it, in close proximity, is a tube. And that tube, as the gas starts, is unlit when one lights the fire, so the gas migrates and goes through the tube. On the other side of the tube is a flame. So what basically happens is, when the gas migrates far enough, it hits the flame, and then one gets through the tube a column of flame, and that lights it through the openings on the gas jet on the side, and that lights the entire flame, because there's a pocket of gas, so that now shoots back and lights the flame. And what happens is, it then starts to burn off the gas at the jet. So the flame that's within the tube is extinguished, because no gas reaches it anymore. So you're left with one fire on the jet, and you're left with a totally separate fire at the pilot light. I mean, that's exactly, you know, technically how exactly it works. So even if partial extinguishing would not be kibbutz, which the post can tell us it is, but here it's not. I'm fully extinguishing one flame and leaving a different flame. So it really has no effect whatsoever. Yes. So I said, if the situation is that I need to keep it on the fire, and the fire is too high, and I don't have another flame that's ready to go with the appropriate heat, then I'm allowed to turn it down. Now, if you have another flame, you should certainly move it off. Yeah. Well, let's say it's the only flame that I had, and I don't want it to boil over, then I would be allowed to turn it down for that reason. Well, listen, it has its, you know, its inconveniences too, having one flame. Now, another issue which arises on Yom Tov, which touches kibbutz, has to do with Havdalah. Yeah, you may ask me, well, when do you make Havdalah on Yom Tov? Well, when Motzei Shabbos is Yom Tov, whether it's Motzei Shabbos leading into Yom Tov, as we had at the beginning of Pesach this year, or other times when Motzei Shabbos is going from the first day Yom Tov to the second day Yom Tov, so we have to recite the Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos. Now, in the recitation of the Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, so we know there are five elements that the Gemara tells us in Arvei Pesachim: Yak Nahaz, Yayin, Bor Priyadochim, Kiddush, the basic bracha of Kiddush, Neir, bracha of Borim or Yaish, Havdalah Hamavdil, which ends in Hamavdil from Kiddush to Kiddush, and finally the Shechiyon, Uzman. There are five elements to the Kiddush and the Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos. when we're going into Yom Kippur. Now the question is, how do we handle the situation of the Nair? Now normally, as we know, we have a multi-wick candle that we use for the Havdalah on Matzah Shabbos. Now we're not going to obviously take out the regular Havdalah candle on Yom Kippur and light it. There's one in the world that we're going to do with this thing, that it burns for the next million hours, roaring oil. You know, we can't put it out. And the regular Matzah Shabbos, they dip it in the wine, pour the wine on it, and we're rid of it. So that we're not going to do. So the question is, what are we supposed to do? Now, I asked my chaver in yeshiva, when I was a good many years back, and I asked him the following question. In your parents' home, and some of the parents were in fact people that were B'nai Torah, did anyone have a practice that they put the candles together by the Havdalah? And among all my chaverim, I couldn't find anyone. There were some, I think, that claimed. Later that I've met, some people that claimed in their homes they did it. But the overwhelming percentage of people that I have ever asked this question to were all to admit to me that in their parents' home it wasn't done. And if it was done, it's some fellow came back from yeshiva and decided it was a good idea and tried to implement it. But in fact, if you asked in terms of what the Messiah was, from previous generations, we're talking from even among learned mishpachos, it was not done. Now, the question is, how are we mitayim the nair on Motzei Shabbos if we have two separate wicks? So if someone happens to have the Messiah and his family, yet, you know, and the Doris, they're doing it, it's my tayim my norm. I'm not dealing with a person that legitimately has the Messiah. I can tell me that his Zayd and his elder Zayd, his grandfather and his great-grandfather also had that practice. I'm not concerning myself with those, from what I'm, in my experience, that very small minority of people that actually had that practice. But to the largest extent, it was unheard of. Now, the Siman Reish Tzadik Vav in the Shulchan Aruch, it's in Hilchos Havdalah, which deals with the halachos of the Nair and Motzei Shabbos. Here we have a debate between the Mogen Avraham and Rabbi Akiva Eiger. If it's necessary to combine the different wicks together, or the fact that I have more than one wick burning, that's enough, in fact, that it's considered a wick. Rabbi Akiva Eiger expresses the view that even if they burn separately, it would still fulfill the din of Avukah. So according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, there was not really a necessity to put them together. The fact that we do, maybe we want to fulfill the Mogen Avraham's view generally as well. Now, interestingly, the Gemara states in Pesachim that Avukah l'Havdalah, to use a multi-whipped flame for Havdalah, the Gemara doesn't say it's obligatory, the Gemara says mitzvah and amufah, it's preferable to do so. It's not obligatory. So clearly one has fulfilled it then, even if I didn't have a multi-flamed candle. It's preferable. Now there are those that want to insist that in fact not only isn't it necessary to do so, but it shouldn't be done. I'm talking among significant Talmidei Chachamim that hold that way, because their claim is that the removal of the two, separating the two candles, is an act of kibbutz. I'm extinguishing. Now, I do not agree with them in that regard. I do not believe they're correct. Because if that would be the case, I would never be able to light one candle from another candle on Yom Tov either. Because I put one candle in and I only remove it after it lights. So what? How can one light one candle from another, which is the universe? How do we light Neiris? How can I light any Neiris on Yom Tov except Neir Miner? And I'm going to take the first one out. So I do not believe it's a violation of kibbutz. I do not believe so. I had some riots to the fact, also a number of riots, that is not a violation of Kibbutz. But for whatever the reason, that I cannot speculate what the reasons are, but the Messiah was not to do so. So all I'm stating is that those in fact that have that Messiah, such as I do, that they don't have a reason, there's no reason to change the Messiah. The Messiah is that we fulfill the halacha according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it's mitzvah and amufcha. According to the Mogen Avraham, we certainly fulfill the din, the ikra, the dinner. And for that reason, you know, I am loath to change aspects of the Messiah. Those things which were nimsa, we learn the dir, those practices of Klal Yisrael, even among learned Jews. And they fit in with the Shulchan Aruch. I have very, very little inclination ever to touch them. is to leave them alone. Yeah, got it. Well, it must be a very small candle, probably. Ah, with 2 weeks, huh? In person. Yeah. Okay. It's also a question of how closely the wicks can be to each other, and if they get too close, there's also a problem. Not yet, yeah. That it becomes one flame instead of two. That's another issue. But that's... Yeah. There are, in terms of a hookah, has definitions. Yeah. I think an electric light is typically an hookah. But the problem with an electric light is the following. As I told you, Rav Chaim Moshe made a bracha on an electric light. So I don't have a problem making an electric light. Rav Chaim Moshe made a bracha. He obviously felt that it fulfilled even the din of hookah too. You know, maybe because the wire itself, there's more than one piece of wire making up the filament. Maybe that was his consideration. But the problem is when one uses an electric bulb, there's a halacha which says the following, that a ner b'shoshes, in effect a lantern, so if it's painted, if it's a painted lantern and I can't see the flame directly, I cannot make a bracha bar ma'ariyesh on it, only on an unpainted lantern. And consequently, that's why the times when we have Havdalah here, when there's no ner for whatever the reason may be, so I tell him to use one of the spotlights, which in fact are unfrosted bulbs, so that one could see the filament directly. But in a situation where it's a frosted bulb that you can't directly see the filament, so the poskim have determined that that's not appropriate to recite the Baruch Mariyash. It's considered Ner Bashoshes. So that's the consideration that one has to be careful about. Questions concerning Kivui Anot. Anything that we've touched tonight. I do not put them together. Our practice in our family was not to put them together, and I leave it in that particular fashion. You know, it's interesting. My family car, we would mention that the shir tonight is dedicated in the Nishras, my mother, Allah Shalom. And tonight and tomorrow is the last day of the Avelis, at the end of the 12 months. The Yortzeit is actually in a month. As is Hashem, and I'm hopeful that the Akomas Matzeva will take place on the 26th of June, in fact. Another month from now. But tonight is the final day of the Avelis begins. And she was a woman of indomitable Amuna. And that was in fact her guiding light throughout her life. It was her Amuna. The Amuna that she had in the Rabbeinu Shalom, the Amuna that she had in the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah, and that gave her an indomitable spirit. One that was unfazed by anything that she faced in life. She was a sensitive woman. A very much a bilis regish, disturbed her. But acharei gechlois hakol, in terms of what one is supposed to do in this world, she was a piece of steel. And because of that, she was absolutely dedicated to the server that she had received from her parents, her grandparents. Zeido Olam Hashalom was quite a learned Jew, with a Talmud Chacham, was a sheichet. Spent an enormous part of his life learning. In the last about 17 or so years, 18 years of his life, he was not well, and he did not work too much in that time, a little bit, and the greatest share of his time he spent learning in those years, and he learned rather longer in his youth than most people did in the parts of Europe where he came from. And consequently, she took from that spirit, the knowledge, the Amunah and Torah that she was raised with, to resist all manner of temptation and all the prevailing winds of the time. existed in the 1920s, in the 1930s, in the 1940s. She was unscathed by all of it. I hope that the shir will be Le'ilu Nishmasa, and that her schus, in fact, should be a schus for all of us.